Hey everyone, welcome to the Plus Platoon. We're a Disney Plus fan podcast that gives honest, spoiler-filled reviews of movies and shows on Disney Plus. We look at new releases, coming attractions, and we'll even go back into the vault to revisit some of the classic Disney that's on the platform. Make sure you're subscribed and you will never miss a moment. I'm going to bring in Kate. Kate, good to see you this evening.
So glad I get to be part of your world today in this this episode.
Sure. Anyway, Pete, how you doing tonight?
Hey guys, look at this stuff. Isn't it neat?
Ooh, that was a good one. That was a good one.
Steve, help.
I had thingamabobs. Isn't that funny?
So it's going to be one of those weeks. Okay. Guys, if you have not already, please like, subscribe, share. We got some fun shows coming up, including some shows of premieres and going back into the way back into the vault to another one I can't believe we hadn't watched yet. But this one, we are finally watching The Little Mermaid from 1989. Was the beginning of the Disney Renaissance. Had Howard Ashman and Alan Menken did the songs. You've got Jodie Benson, Pat Carroll, is that?
Yeah.
Pat Carroll. Grimsley is actually the same guy who did Roger in 101 Dalmatians, which is why the nose looks like that and he has the pipe, is because it's the same voice. If anyone doesn't know the story of Little Mermaid, go watch The Little Mermaid and shame on you. And again, we are looking at the 1989 animated version, not the 23, somewhere in that neighborhood, live action. This is the animated one. Has Sebastian, has Flounder, King Triton, Ursula, Flotsam, Jetsam, everybody. So I'm just going to dive right into this. Oh, come on. Nothing for that one.
I can't knock you down, though.
Okay, so guys, what's the best song in this play, in this movie? Okay, there's four big bangers, and we're each going to try and defend one of them. So, Kate, what is the best song for you?
Poor Unfortunate Souls. It is up there with the best villain songs. Ursula, in my opinion, is a fantastic villain, terrifying. It is a bop that will get stuck in your head. It has depth to it. It's great. So I vote Poor Unfortunate Souls.
Okay. Pete?
I don't know how, I mean, they're all great songs, but your Part of Your World is like it's the I Wish song. It's if you think of I Wish songs, that's the one you think of. Jodie Benson knocked it out of the park singing it. Lyrics are awesome, and her delivery on it is just perfect. It's a wonderful song. It fits perfectly in the movie. The reprise is even good. It's such a memorable song. And I got to go to an event at Disney with Jodie Benson, and she sang that to us. So, you know, I have a partial to it.
And that's the one that Jeffrey Katzenberg actually wanted to cut.
He wanted to cut it. Can you believe that?
Doing Katzenberg, yes, I can believe that.
Oh, yeah.
And it also started a trend of, after this, every Disney musical movie animated had an I Wish song.
Yep.
So...
Okay. Even Wish.
Even, oh, yeah. Steve, what you got? There's a couple left. What's yours?
Mine would be Under the Sea. So if you don't, not in for the big mushy I Wish song, you want the like big production number, it would be Under the Sea.
I would agree.
It has everything. It's very catchy. If you ride the Little Mermaid ride, it's the big, big show-stopping scene on the ride. So...
And I would ask, it's the Broadway showstopper of the movie.
Yep.
So, and I got to go with Kiss the Girl, guys. It's it gets to me, it gets a little bit around the consent issue with the fact that, you know, she, you know, it's, you know, she wants you to actually kiss her. So it's okay. Is the idea that she's looking across you and she actually wants you to kiss her. She just can't say it. But just the, it's the song, it adds a little bit of levity to that section. Now we're not going to, okay. Scuttle, when Scuttle says, you know, we need to start having a little bit of music. Yes, Pete, we see. Cool. That's cool. Yeah. When Scuttle starts saying, you know, what they need is a little bit of music, and he starts, you know, that wah, 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 is actually the Romeo and Juliet ballet by Tchaikovsky. So, but it's just, it's, I say it's the second production number. Because y'all, most musicals have that big one, and then somewhere in the second act, they have at least a medium-sized one that gets most of the company involved. That's Kiss the Girl to me. Now, we're not talking about Fathoms Below, which is a great intro song. Great intro song to set everything up.
That's a great song.
We're not talking Les Poissons, the chef and Sebastian's little comedic relief there.
Also a great song.
After Kiss the Girl, there's not really any singing. So
no, but you're like 20 minutes from the end at that point, too.
Oh, right, but Kiss the Girl is not your traditional 10:30 song. It's not your traditional. We've fallen in love, and there's one more thing that's gonna break. There's one little hump we still have to get over, but they realize they're in love with each other. There's not a 10:30 song in this. Mm-hmm. Musical theater people that I describe that the 10:30 song fairly accurately. It's Till There Was You and Music Man. It's there's just about every musical will have the two main characters finally realize they're in love with each other at about 10:30 at night, because most musicals run from 8 to 11.
Right.
So that's why it was called the 10:30 song. So Ed, I don't really think there's a bad song in this musical, in this movie, which I would say is a true musical. Yes, they made it into a musical, and I think starting in 2007, maybe. But, and they added a few songs, but I would say this was a, you could tell that this had the Broadway backing of the Howard Ashman and Alan Menken. Because Howard Ashman was coming off of Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah, both of them.
Yeah. So, okay. So if that's the best song, Little Mermaid also has some amazing side characters. Amazing side characters. So, and I'll admit, this one we did not preordain as far as which song we were going to select. So, Kate, I will let you go first, guessing who you might choose.
I liked Scuttle.
Okay.
I think Scuttle, every time Scuttle is on the screen, he makes me laugh. It was a tough choice between Scuttle and Flounder, but I'm going to go Scuttle.
We're going to go Flounder.
Yeah, it's a tough choice, but I'm going to go Scuttle. Pete?
Oh, I can't not say Sebastian. Man, what a great character he is. So I'm going to go with Sebastian, just very much the, you know, I realize Flounder is this too, but like the sidekick comedic animal character is, you know, he's a
he reminds me a lot of it. He reminds me a similar character as Iago in Aladdin. That sarcastic type,
yeah,
and fatalistic almost.
Yeah.
Flounder is just kind of there. Flounder's the better friend.
Right.
Sebastian is Zazu.
Yes, yep. That's a good comparison for sure.
Okay, Pete, how about you?
So I'm gonna go there. I'm gonna go with Flotsam and Jetsam. I think they pair very well with Ursula. For not really saying a lot, if I remember correctly in the movie, but
I don't say any. Oh, no, they talk to her.
Oh, they talk. Right. Yeah,
they talk to her. But I think just they fit with her very well. How she uses them to see things. So I'm going to go with Flotsam and Jetsam. And also great memes.
Yes. I'm actually going to go with one that's already been said. I'm going to go with Scuttle also. Just if nothing else, it's the great, late, great Buddy Hackett. the, you know, how they used to sit around the fire and stare at each other. Got very boring. So that had to have been an ad lib, but it's just how.
And it's easy to have too much Buddy Hackett, but this movie had just the right amount of Buddy Hackett.
This has just the right amount of Buddy Hackett. Like I would argue, Music Man has just the right amount of Buddy Hackett. Okay. You can't. Now, Buddy Hackett as a main character, I don't know that I could do. But well, another great movie, Buddy Hackett, is
Herbie.
Herbie's close to too much Buddy Hackett.
It's too much Buddy Hackett, yeah.
It's a mad world. Also works with about the right amount of Buddy Hackett, if nothing else, because he's paired with Mickey Rooney, and there are so many great names in that movie. Mm-hmm. But I got to go with Scuttle on this one. Just again, the comic, he is the true comic relief of the show, and usually the true comic reliefs are not my favorites, but I can't help but always, Scuttle never gets on my nerves. Flounder definitely gets on my nerves sometimes. Sebastian whines a little bit too much. Sebastian should have said, no, you know what you need to do, girl. You're 16 years old. No, I need to be a voice of reason. I'm going to go get your dad. you're a sophomore. Come on. So, okay. So,
you know who Scuttle reminds me of? Scuttle reminds me of, from The Rescuers Down Under, the albatross.
You know why?
Actually, tell me.
It should remind you of the albatross from The Rescuers.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
No, the original Rescuers. Because that's also Buddy Hackett.
Yep, that's who I was talking about.
Yeah, so the songs are great. It's got great characters. I can't really fault any of our main characters.
Mm-hmm.
Really, they all kind of fit their own, you know, they fit their look great.
Well, Ursula's a great villain, and give Disney
villain,
and give Disney credit for like not having her fall to her death like they do about 90% of the time, and actually like stabbing her through the heart.
Now, did you know the reason when he throws the spear and it cuts her arm and she bleeds purple?
Yeah,
is because if she bled red, it has to be PG.
PG, yeah.
But if it's
really
purple, they could keep the G rating.
Huh.
So that's why she bleeds purple.
Yeah.
But this was also the last Disney feature that was almost 100% completely hand animated, hand inked, and used. This is the last one that used the multiplane camera. Ironically, not Disney's multiplane camera because it was too out of shape and couldn't be used, but they went to another company and used a multiplane camera. But this was basically the last truly hand-drawn Disney movie. Because Beauty and the Rescuers Down Under definitely had some parts that were CGI. We've talked about that before. Yep. Beauty and the Beast, the big thing on that, of course, is the ballroom scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then as it keeps going, computers get more and more and more and more and more. This was also the first Disney movie to win an Academy Award for Best Song and Best Score since 1971.
Was that Winnie the Pooh?
No. Winnie the Pooh was shorts. It was
71. Robin Hood?
Gina, help in the background. Throw it up in our chat. Yeah, I don't remember, to be frank, because I should have looked. I should have known. But they also set off a streak that in 1990, they did not win the best song or score because that was Rescuers Down Under. But after that, they won best song and best score like 4 years in a row. Basically, Aladdin won it. Lion King won it. I think Pocahontas won it. And there's like a stretch there all of a sudden. So the songs are great. The characters are great.
Bedknobs and broomsticks. Bedknobs and
broomsticks, right. So if the songs are great and the characters are great, what else really keeps this movie afloat? What else really works for this movie? Kate, I'll go ahead and go with you.
Make sure I'm not muted. So I remember watching this movie as a kid, and it was the animation that pulled me in. I loved how they animated the bubbles. I remember like watching this and then wanting to go play in the pool to try to create the bubbles. Go ahead, Derek.
Every bubble was, they would not allow them to do any Xeroxing on any of the bubbles. Every bubble had to be hand drawn, and they actually outsourced that. But every bubble had to be individually drawn.
Even I literally just watched this movie with my best friend's little girl. And even just rewatching it, I was like, oh my God, I want to go out and play in a pool again, because how Ariel, like just the animation of it was so good. How they made her seem so like innocent and childlike. And they had even like, I loved when she would sit and she'd take her toes and she would like wiggle her toes. It just, to me, the animation in this was so good. And I remember thinking that even when I was really little watching this movie. So, Pete, what about you?
I really noticed the economy of story in this. And what I mean by that is there's no wasted bits in this movie. Everything is telling a story, moving that story forward. There's no fat. They tell you just enough information that you move on to the next beat. It never sags. I mean, Derek is really big on, well, they could have chopped 20 minutes out of this. There's no 20 minutes in this movie to chop out of. I mean, unless for some reason you don't like one of the songs. Where I notice this the most is like, you have the kiss the girl moment, you know, and they're starting to fall in love. And then Ursula's like, hey, I got to stop this. And she, you know, turns into the Vanessa. Is that the name of the character?
Yeah,
I think.
Yes. Yeah, it's Vanessa.
And she turns into Vanessa, and that bit just, they don't waste any time with that. They're just like, he sees her on the beach. He goes to meet her. The next thing we see is Ariel comes downstairs. He's hypnotized. He said, we're getting married at sunset. And they go right to the wedding boat. There's nothing happens there that doesn't need to happen. You don't have 20 minutes of explaining how she manipulated him or anything like that. Like you would in a more modern movie, there'd just be so much more fat in there. I just was like, gosh, this story just zips along without any. So kudos to the Disney, the writers that wrote this movie, because it's just, as I said, nothing unnecessary in this movie. It's just, you know, if it's not a joke or something, it's propelling the story forward. And I just think it's great. So, Steve.
For me, it's Ursula. I mean, she's not the normal, like, crazed villain. She's very smart. She knows what she's doing. My other half, we always say, she had a contract. She was in the right. She got a signed contract. So, just very enjoyable, like that over the top, but not too over the top, just played very well. Yes, Derek, go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to bring that up right now because you introduced it. That is a huge plot hole in this. No 16-year-old is allowed to enter into any contract without their parents' consent. So the contract is null and void. Therefore, that's the end of the movie.
You don't know Under the Sea rules.
Right. You don't know the laws of Under the Sea.
No, but I'm just saying.
Yeah.
That's something that has always bothered me is if she's 16, how is she in an ironclad contract without parental consent? I mean, I'm just.
She had a fake ID.
That still doesn't matter. Because you have to show birth certificates and passports and that kind of stuff whenever you're signing big contracts like that. Anyway, but
actually, I got a really big kick out of the scene where like Triton is trying to use his lightning bolts on the contract. She's like, it's a contract. Your magic doesn't work on my contract.
Yeah. But again, and I got to go back to the music. And again, it's not just the songs, but it's the background music. It's the notes that you find through there.
Yeah.
It's, we didn't talk about even like that opening scene and some of the effects with the music, like the fact that you've got Triton's big fanfare, and then you've got Alan Menken playing kazoo when Sebastian gets introduced. And yes, that's actually Alan Menken playing. It's because it's the same theme as Triton. It's just on kazoo. So, but it's some of the background music and some of those musical notes that are just so great. I also want to talk about Grimm, a logical, honest, actually wants the best for him and actually gives good advice, adult sidekick to the prince. Because you don't always have that. So it's just kind of a... There are some good things in this movie, especially when you focus around the music. Okay? So if that's what kept this movie afloat, what almost made this movie sink? What did not work so well for this? And Kate, we'll start up with you again.
Just the whole, like, non-consensual of it all. A little bit. I don't want to harp too much on that because, like, this is not new information.
She did consent.
That's fair.
Her friend's saying, yes, she wants you to.
True. I think I've seen this movie too many times because... if I never saw The Little Mermaid again, I would be fine with that. Like, it's a good movie. It's catchy. It's clever. It's got good songs. But, like, I'm just, like, and I could say this about a couple other animated Disney movies. I'm just, like, a little bit burnt out on it. So, I don't know if my... I don't know if my, like... on this movie is because it's actually the movie's fault or because I'm just kind of burnt out on it. So I'm going to pass to Pete.
Gosh, there's not much wrong with this movie. I mean, if anything's wrong with it, I'll agree with Kate on this. I don't think it's quite as good as the things that came immediately after it. At the time it came out, when you were looking at, you know, The Great Mouse Detective and The Fox and the Hound and The Black Cauldron as being the previous Disney movies, this was, I went and saw this, I was 20, and I went and saw it with my friends in college. This is the kind of movie nerd I am. And we all loved it. And, you know, it just made an impression even, you know, even at that age. But there's not a lot wrong with it, but it's not quite, it's not quite what's to come. I think Aladdin and Lion King and Beauty and the Beast are all better movies. So, you know, I guess that if the flaw is it isn't, you know, the best movie ever made. Yeah, I guess that's a flaw. Steve, what do you think?
I think you both have the same thoughts as I. It's good. Is it great? Great. That would be up to argument. So, Derek?
I don't think it is up to argument. I don't think it's great. Great. So, I'm going to completely agree with the burnout. This was one of the first movies that really pushed on VHS. And my mom at this point ran a home daycare. So just about at least once or twice a day, the little girls would all want to watch The Little Mermaid. That being said, if you take out the songs, there's not much there. If you take out the songs, this is not a very good movie. It's the plot is, I mean, the songs are amazing, and I'm not going to argue with that about anything. But the story's kind of sure. And there's not any plot points that don't revolve around a song. So it's, which I get is how they did things, but it's just when the songs are not on, I find myself a little disinterested in this for the most part, just because there's parts that are good, but there's parts like, I would argue that the part in the ship with her and Flounder could have been cut with the shark. To me, that could have been cut. I understand it, you know, kind of sets the scene for, you know, the guppy comment and all that kind of stuff. But to me, this just, there are so many, as you said, does it suffer from not being what it was after, what came after this? If you're grading on a curve, yes, it does suffer from that. It also suffers from not being some of the stuff from the Disney heyday of the 1940s and 30s to 50s. So, and we're not even going to mention what comes up 6 years later. So, 5 years, 6 years. Toy Story 95 or 94?
95.
95, yeah. So, we're not even going to mention when Pixar jumps into the story. So, to me, without the song, when they're not doing one of the songs, it's sure to me. So, Pete, go ahead, rebuttal.
Well, I would just say it's a very simplistic story, right? It's a girl meets guy, immediately falls in love, and does things to be with him. And that's the whole
Romeo and Juliet.
That's the whole story. It's not even Romeo and Juliet. Well,
he's 3 years older than Juliet was, so you know.
Yeah.
And not to mention the fact that it follows the original exactly none. And most of the people like over in like Holland and the Netherlands and that Brussels and that Belgium and all that whole area do not like this movie because it does not stick. The idea behind The Little Mermaid is what made her life so great is she actually sacrifices herself for the prince she loves.
Yeah. So guys at the end. So one of those guys that I went to see
at the end of that. So
yeah, one of those guys that I went to see the movie, we would see this, you know, they'd show it at the school and he always loved yelling at the end. She dies at the, she's supposed to die at the end.
Yeah. So
that would not have been a good movie.
No. No, it would and that would not have been a Disney movie. I mean, let's be honest. She also doesn't have a mother. So, you know, I saw something where it's two Disney shirts and they're new Disney shirts. And then Disney shirts are all, it's like a best dad ever. And it's like dads and the kids and there's best moms ever. And there's no human mothers. Because other than Andy's mom and Mrs. Incredible and the Gowan Brave, but in like the original, none of the mothers were human.
That's crazy.
So my daughter informed me because we asked this question is like because they specifically say basically she doesn't have a mother because she says I'm gonna miss my sisters and my dad. According to Little Mermaid 2, her mom is killed by pirates, which is why Triton does not like humans.
Yeah. Sure. now speaking of pirates. We're going to go a little bit different direction. As I said, I'm heading to Disney World. I actually, by the time this airs, I will probably be at either Hollywood Studios or Epcot, but I will have already been at Magic Kingdom. And my question for you is, this movie has a ride based on it at both Disneyland and Disney World, right, Steve?
Yep.
Okay. Just, there's, you know, we've got all sorts of different movies. Some of them have, you know, stuff just at Disneyland. Some of them have just stuff at Disney World. Most of them have stuff at both. My question is, what is the best Disney movie-based ride? And I'm going to say it has to be an active ride. It cannot be a ride that's been shut down or rethemed.
Can it be either coast?
Yes, it can be either coast.
Okay, I have mine.
Oh!
Okay. What?
Okay.
Did the movie have to come before the ride?
Yes.
Great.
Okay. Do you want to go first then, Kate?
Yes.
Okay.
Peter Pan. Hands down. There's no contest. Peter Pan. That is still to this day my favorite ride in all of Magic Kingdom for sure. I was going to go with Snow White's Scary Adventure because that shiz was terrifying, but Peter Pan. Pete, you go.
I'm going to say my favorite is Alice in Wonderland in Disneyland. I love that ride, and I love the things they did recently to plus it up. And I love that it, like, goes in the dark ride, and then it goes outside for a little while, and then it comes back inside. And I just really get a kick out of that. I was originally going to say a different one out there, but I changed my mind, and that's the one I'm going with.
Oh, okay. I'm torn between two. I'm torn between Mr. Toad. I love Mr. Toad. And but for the record, I think
Mr. Toad is still at Disneyland.
Yes. Yes, it is.
That was the one I was originally going to say, Steve. So,
But I think the one that really hits, it's not Disney, it's a Pixar, is Radiator Racers. Because that really initial going really around that bend, like really the first time you ride that really hits, like, oh my gosh, I'm in the movie. So I'm going to go with that one. But shout out for Mr. Toad.
I Radiator Springs Racers is a great selection. I'm going to go with one that is actually much better at Magic Kingdom than it is at Disneyland. It is Winnie the Pooh for me. Because it follows Winnie the Pooh and the Blustery Day and Winnie the Pooh. It follows the actual like length of the story. I love how you bounce with Tigger. You float along in the honeypots. At Disneyland's version, you literally just go up and down, and the story is completely out of order, and it makes no sense.
It is weird.
It is weird.
And that they chose to do that, yeah.
So mine is probably the Winnie the Pooh at Magic Kingdom. Okay, I'm going to ask this real quick. Is there one that you think they completely missed on?
Can I say that dumb indoor Avatar ride?
The boat ride?
Yeah. The boat ride, yeah.
Yeah. Yes, as you have said before, I would not wait no time. I would not walk onto that ride again. Yeah.
Well, okay, he said it had to be still active.
What were you going to say?
Stitch the Great Escape or whatever.
That's a good one, too.
That was bad.
I walked out of that and went, well, that's like 10 minutes. I'll never get back.
Yeah. Now, if it did not still have to be active, I honestly probably would have said Splash Mountain because it was a great representation of the Brer Fox, Brer Bear, and Brer Rabbit sections of Song of the South. But it has been switched over to Tiana's, and I want to know how, if it's happening after, how can the mosquitoes still be alive? Or the dragonflies still be alive? But anyway, but there's lots of them. The Little Mermaid ride, at least I didn't actually go on the one in Disneyland, but the one in Disney World is phenomenal. It follows the story. It's just Disney does that so great. Yeah. Sometimes they wait too long.
Mm-hmm.
I would also say honorable mention potential miss to the Moana Journey of Water section at Epcot. I get what they're trying to do, but they could have done it differently.
I think that is an effective attraction for children.
Young children.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it's very effective for who they were targeting it at.
That's fair. That's very fair.
I will agree with you. It's not a great attraction for the whole family or anything, but yeah. I got to go with Steve, like honorable mention. You got to give it to Mr. Toad's because that movie is horrible and that ride is so much fun.
And see, I was going to go with Radiator Springs Racers is because the first thing you do is once you pull out, it's you go under the bridge and they're playing the music and there's the waterfall from the movie.
Oh, no, it's Radiator Springs Racers is arguably one of the best Disney rides, period.
Period. Full stop.
So when Steve said that, I was like, I almost didn't think of that because it's such a good ride.
Yeah. So
where do you feel like Seven Dwarfs Mine Train ranks?
Bottom for me. I was underwhelmed.
For a movie to represent the entire movie, no. To represent do they get the actual mining scene very close to correct? Yes.
Yeah.
Including the fact that when the dwarves march up, that's actually the shadows that they cast in the movie that went up. But to me, it's always been two barnstormers with a 30-second dark ride thrown in the middle.
I like that ride. But as a, yeah, it's not really telling a story.
Yes.
It's giving you basically one scene. Maybe you count the second scene in at the end, but, yeah. So as a telling a story ride, it's not very good. I'll say this. I like the ride a lot. Its popularity is way higher than it should be.
And I would argue that same thing for Peter Pan.
Peter Pan's problem is it doesn't
need an hour and a half wait. I'm sorry.
No, but here's Peter Pan's problem. It's an extremely slow loader.
Yes, it is.
In which they put 80% of the people on with fast passes. So the fact that you're waiting 90 minutes, it's because there's only 200 people in line in front of you, but it takes 90 minutes for 200 people to get on.
That's fair.
If they took away the fast passes on that ride, it would never be more than an hour.
I would argue it would probably never be more than about 35, 40 minutes. Yeah. But just because it could load faster than it does.
Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah.
Although the worst loading ride used to be Dumbo.
I'm with you, Kate. When I was a kid, absolutely my favorite ride. My daughter, there was one trip back when you could grab lots of fast passes. We rode that ride 7 rides on one trip. And I never get tired of it, quite honestly. I don't ride it that much because it's such a long wait, but I love it.
Yeah. So
it's great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Back to Little Mermaid. Any other thoughts on the movie? The music, it may have some of the best music of the Disney Renaissance ones. I would say, to me, the only other one that might be... Okay, the one that doesn't work as well for music for me is Aladdin.
I still like a lot of Aladdin's score, but I would agree that it's not this level.
Right.
I would say Beauty and the Beast is this level.
I would say Lion King is this level.
And I would say Lion King is this level.
Yes. All right. So, as we always do, we do cups of pixie dust out of 5. And Kate.
I'll take it. I'll be called Gina any day of the week. That's a huge compliment.
What are we doing for Little Mermaid?
I'm going to give it a solid 3.
Okay. I'm giving this a 4. I did not find, like Kate and Steve saying, and even Derek, that they're a little tired of it. I haven't seen it in a while. So, you know, it definitely deserves the title classic. So it's a 4.
I'm at 3.5 because out of like Aladdin, Lion King, Beauty and the Beast, it would be at my bottom. So 3.5.
I'm actually going to go with 2.5 on this.
What?
I think there is.
Wait. So last week, didn't you give The Brave Little Toaster a 3?
Yes.
So that's a better movie than this movie.
Parts of it, yes.
He likes what he likes.
I mean,
I think I also scored Brave Little Toaster higher.
You did too.
But keep in mind, the Brave Little Toaster isn't burnt out for me. I'm burnt out on the Brave Little Toaster.
You mean Little Mermaid?
That's what I meant.
The Brave Little Mermaid.
Brave Little Mermaid.
Brave Little Mermaid.
Yeah, I just...
She doesn't do anything brave.
No kidding. As I said, if it's not for the songs, and if this is on TV, because this is going to be up on Freeform coming up in June, because they're showing like lots of Disney movies. If they're not getting ready to sing a song, I'm not watching this. So, and to me, that's about a 2.5. So,
That's fair.
No Disney Plus news this week because full disclosure, we actually taped this a week ahead. But next week, we are going to be watching Hoppers. That is the new Pixar movie that came out in March. Pete, I believe, is the only one who has seen it.
Yep.
Pete, how many of the 3 of us do you think are going to enjoy it?
Derek, I can never tell with you. I think both Kate and Steve will definitely enjoy it. I think you will enjoy it somewhat.
Okay. That's fair. Because none of the rest of us have seen it, so this is the first time watching it. It came out, I said it came out June 6th, but again, no, sorry, June 4th. But again, it would normally have been this show, but since we had to pre-tape it because of my Disney trip, we are watching it next week. But if you have other shows you want us to watch, at the moment, we need a great idea for 4th of July. So if there's a movie you want us to watch and not Hamilton. But if
not Avatar 3.
Oh, not Avatar 3. No, we're not watching Avatar 3, to be perfectly honest. But if there is something you want us to watch, please send us suggestions at plusplatoon@gmail.com. Send us a message on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, anywhere. We answer everything you send us. We have new episodes every Thursday on YouTube and all the major podcasting services. For Kate, Pete, and Steve, Gina in the background, we will see everyone next week with Hoppers. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Thanks for watching this week's episode of the Plus Platoon. Be sure to subscribe to the Plus Platoon podcast to keep getting great content each week. Then head over to Apple Podcasts and leave those 5-star reviews, as they help make the Plus Platoon visible to even more Disney Plus fans. Also, go to YouTube and like and subscribe to the Plus Platoon channel, where you can watch all future episodes live. If you have a question for the Plus Platoon, please send us an email to plusplatoon@gmail.com or connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram @PlusPlatoon.
The Plus Platoon is a Disney Plus fan podcast and is not affiliated with the Walt Disney Company or the Disney Plus streaming service. All opinions expressed on the show are solely those of the individual hosts and in no way reflect the views of the Walt Disney Company.
Thanks for watching, and be sure to stay tuned for next week's episode, because the Plus Platoon is to be continued.